Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Griefsters. Hello. Happy Boxing Day. Happy Christmas. Merry Christmas. Happy dark winter festive Yuletide, however you celebrate it. I hope that wherever you are listening in the world, that yesterday, if it was Christmas Day for you yesterday, I hope it was okay. I hope you got through it all right. And I just want to say we did it. We're here. We're at Boxing Day. It's like anniversaries, you know, like once you've just done the day, you can just relax and just think, right, I don't have to worry about that for another year, and we can all just sit in our pajamas watching Netflix and eating lint balls. I hope you can eat lint balls. If you can't eat lint balls, I'm really sorry. I feel very sorry for you if you can't eat lint balls. God, do they do vegan lint balls? I hope they do. Thank you for listening. If you listened to last week's episode, you will know that this week is also a compilation. You are listening to Now That's What I Call Griefcast Part 2. Last week we covered sort of episodes from about 2017, and this week we're going to cover most episodes from this year, 2018, I think. Just going back, and I know there's so many episodes, so we're just choosing some of our favourite clips, and also some Twitter requests we had for some of the clips as well, just so you can have a little sneak listen to them all and not have to hear a really intense conversation this week, just hopefully some funny stories and some poignant ones as ever. This is the last episode of 2018, and I just want to say, you know, we're actually going to take a break in January as well. I hope that's okay. I worry. I hope that's okay. I need a break, basically. So we will be back in February with brand new episodes from amazing, amazing people. But, you know, as I said, there are now, this is the 65th episode. So if you hadn't listened to them all, please feel free over January to go back and listen to them. And I want to say, if you didn't listen to last week, you would have missed me saying thank you. So I want to say again, thank you so, so much. If you have listened to this show or tweeted about it or Instagrammed about it or even just plain old told your friends about it, I couldn't do this without you. And I am so, so grateful and overwhelmed that this year we've had of the amazing awards and the amazing support and the amazing emails I still get. And I know I haven't replied to them all. I'm so sorry if you haven't had a reply from me yet. I'm working on it. But thank you, because if it wasn't for you being willing to listen to conversations about grief and talk about it and share it and show people that it's not something that has to be avoided, I wouldn't be able to make this show. And I really do love doing it. So Thank you. And here is your present. It's some clips from past shows. First up, we had a request on Twitter from @LeonieCayman. Leonie wanted to hear the clip of writer and podcaster Sophie Black. Sophie has her own podcast, amazing parenting and comedy podcast called The Trapdoor. Sophie came in to talk to us about her mum who died. And in this clip, she was talking about loneliness and how some people really get it wrong when they're trying to comfort you about that. The next clip you'll hear, I can't even tell you how many requests I had for anything from this episode. So if you haven't listened to the full Robert Popper episode, I really recommend you do. For me, it really is the spirit of Griefcast because it is hilariously funny and hilariously poignant and painful at exactly the same time. It is Robert is an incredible, credible, funny comedy writer, brilliant, genius man. And he came in to talk to me about his grandma. And this was the most requested clip, which is, I'm not going to ruin it for you, just listen. And then after that, we had a request on Twitter from @RosieToomey. She requested to hear the incredible powerhouse that is Deborah Frances White from The Guilty Feminist. Deborah Frances White is Australian and she was travelling back to Australia to, she knew her dad was dying. And she tells here about what I think might be one of the worst and most stressful journeys home we've had on the show. Enjoy. Have you had counselling since then?
I was already seeing very good therapist.
Oh, wow. Because that's a lot
that
to deal with.
That was quite hardcore. Yeah. But, you know, this is the thing about the whole thing, really, is that, you know, that time in my life, I was, you know, dicking about in crappy relationships and I was kind of coasting a bit with work and I didn't quite know what I would, you know, I was just sort of take anything that just landed in my, literally anything that landed in my lap, I would do anything.
We've all been there, yeah. This will do, they seem to know what they're doing.
So might as well. Yeah. And you never know.
It's a great way to start,
yes,
isn't it?
Exactly. So I was doing a lot of that kind of stuff. And then this point was just like, it sounds very bleak, but it was an important bleak. Like I felt so alone.
Yeah.
You know, what with the breakdown in my relationship with my brother, it was great to have my dad and my stepmom around who were amazing, but again, they weren't feeling what I was feeling and, you know.
But that's the thing I've learned from the show, that grief makes you, literally chemically, makes you feel isolated.
Yeah, yeah.
So you feel just like no one gets it.
Yeah.
And even when people are like, I get it, you're like, you don't. And I didn't realise that is what grief is you feel the most alone in the world.
Yeah.
But it took, because I was just like, oh, I just felt really lonely and it was really shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, just to know, like, no, that's just what it is.
That's what it is.
It's
so
like,
and you can feel lonely with other people.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the process.
I do remember being, when she was really ill, so that sort of autumn, I was seeing someone who was just completely dysfunctional, whatever, a crappy relationship. But I remember feeling that even when she was ill, sort of feeling that I knew she was going to die and everyone was saying things like, oh, well, I know someone who had advanced stage 4 cancer and they lived for 8 years. And you're like, well, good for them, I'm allowed to feel shit about this because likely it is, she's not going to live for 8 years. And I remember just being very frustrated and saying to this guy, you know, I just feel, you know, so alone. Like no one understands that this is what's going to happen. And, you know, just feel so alone. And will no one sort of admit that to me, and no one kind of just, you know, and I remember him hugging me and going, you are so alone.
I remember thinking, it's not quite what I
God,
mean.
That is hilarious.
Thanks, fucker.
Yeah, thanks.
Like, what?
Thanks. Oh, thanks.
Whispered into your ear.
Whispered
gently.
Into my ear in bed. You are so alone.
That is the
like, yeah.
A sea, that is sitcom.
I mean, I've had that written in my notebook for ages. But yeah, because it's so bleak, isn't it?
It's so bleak.
So bleak and so misjudged.
It's so misjudged that he thought that's what you wanted.
He thought that I wanted. Because he was...
Because you had
one
said
thing
no
he
one's
was sure
telling me.
There was, that he wasn't on my... He wasn't on my side.
Yeah, dude, what yeah. about you?
Yeah. I was sort of hoping you'd go, yeah. you're not alone.
You're
I'm
not
alone.
Here.
You feel alone, but
yeah.
you're not.
No.
It's just how you feel, and
yeah.
I am here.
No, you are.
Tip, listeners, if someone says that to you, they're asking you
they
to reassure
you
them
that they're not.
That they're not alone.
Yeah.
That this is just yeah. a phase, a process, they'll get through it.
Really funny.
That's incredible.
Pretty bad, isn't it?
I think that might be the worst thing I've ever heard a man
yes.
say. Almost. Almost. That's up there. Like, what made you think that was
yeah,
a good idea?
What made you think? Probably he thought, ooh. She's. I'm trying to empathise. But yeah,
this,
yeah,
is, this is empathising, agreeing with what
yeah,
she's
agreeing,
saying.
Yeah, agreeing, yeah.
I've agreed with her. She can't
you
be annoyed.
Totally alone. But that was
oh
hilarious.
My God.
Yeah, so, but actually... I did feel very alone because I had to clear her house. We lived in for 30 years on my own.
And so your brother had to stay and he was working.
So my brother had kids, was working in the States, and our relationship kind of slowly spiraled, and just we were coming at it from very different points of view. We weren't used to not getting on because we've always been so close. And it was the most painful aspect of
that.
It was a Christmas, where like, so Jewish people, funny thing, they often just celebrate Christmas, because you're not meant to, but we weren't religious, and that's what we do. So we had Christmas dinner at my auntie's house. My grandma, like, had a, like, coughing fit, and she wasn't breathing well, like, some asthma-y thing. And we called an ambulance, and she went in the ambulance, and we were all, like, worried, and we drove after the ambulance. And then she was on a stretcher, like, going in the hospital, and we were following her, and she had an oxygen mask on her mouth, on her face, and she was clutching a handbag, and they were... You know, they gently tried to take her handbag off, and she was like, no way, you're not taking my handbag. Yeah. And it's just perfect timing. And we're walking down the ward, and they're pushing her, you know, far. She's an old woman, she can't breathe. I mean, she was fine in the end, pushing her along, and had the oxygen mask on her. And I said, don't worry, Grandma, you'll be okay, you'll be okay. And she took her oxygen mask for a second, put her hand into her handbag, and said to me, would you like a yogurt? And took out a yogurt. She remembered that moment. I've been keeping a yogurt for Robert. I must give him that. And she took out like a ski strawberry yogurt. And they instantly put it back in a bag and just put the oxygen mask in. Would you like a yogurt? That was what was in her head while she's sort of effectively maybe dying.
Oh my God. What did you say?
It just was like open mouth and thought, that's amazing. Yeah. Would you like a yogurt? Would you like a yogurt? You couldn't write that. I mean, I nicked that line as well on my show. It was perfect.
But yeah, it's almost that thing of like, if you put it in the show, someone would be like, that would never happen. You're like, it did.
It did. Even more extreme version. Yeah. Would you like a yogurt? Now. No.
So
imagine I just then said, oh, yes. Yeah. And then just ate a yogurt there, just with a spoon.
Oh, yeah, actually. Thank you, Grandma. I'll see you in a bit. Let me know how it goes.
That's what I want.
Oh, is it strawberry? Yes, please. So how old was she when she died?
She was 92.
Wow.
Yeah, she did quite well.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I got on this flight. I remember my friends coming together that morning for breakfast and coming around to sort of see me. And I was sobbing. And I remember saying to everyone, I'm sorry. And they were like, don't be ridiculous. But I was just like, you know, really, really sort of slightly falling apart. And I got on the plane. I was in the middle seat.
Oh,
and
that's the worst. That's already the worst.
There was this sort of man spreader on one side. Oh. And on the other side, there was a woman who was slightly kind of, you know, and I just said to her, I just thought, I'm just going to prepare.
Yeah.
And I just turned to her and I just said, look, I'm just telling you this because I
might start weeping.
I said, I might be crying a lot on this flight. And I just need to let you know that because my father's dying and I don't know if I'm going to make it. So, yeah, kind of, I'm really sorry. I don't want to be...
Yeah.
Inexplicably weeping, and she just went. She turned away,
and
she didn't say a single word.
You're joking.
She didn't say, "I'm sorry about that. I'll never forget it." I was just, or okay, you know, understood or anything.
I am so angry that I wasn't that woman, and I couldn't have been on that seat and gone like, or just somebody nice.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm so sorry. Do you want to swap seats? And is there anything I can do? Like, There's just some element of niceness.
Sympathetic response. It was awful.
What? Why was she so cross with you? Like, what did she think? Oh, now I have to sit next to a crying woman. Like,
I guess so.
But
I guess
so. What? Like, doesn't affect your flight. Put your headphones on, watch a film. Like,
I know. It was just, it was such an extraordinary response.
I mean, we talk about this a lot on the show. Like, people react so weirdly to death. Like, it makes people...
Yeah, I get, you just don't know what to say. They just withdraw.
They don't know what to say or they just act so strangely.
I'm sorry. Say I'm sorry for your loss and put your headphones in, you know, sort of thing.
Something. That's awful. Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Absolutely fine. You know, that
kind
of thing.
Yeah, you weren't asking for like... No, can we be BFFs?
It was honestly just information because if I was sitting at someone who was weeping uncontrollably, I'd just sort of be like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So if you're informed, you think, okay, well, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hadn't slept at this point because I hadn't really slept the night before when I found out about the stroke, and I hadn't slept at all really that night. I think I'd been woken up at, I don't know, maybe it was 2 or something. Mm. So I hadn't slept all of that night. So I hadn't slept for 48 hours and I wasn't going to sleep for another 24 on this flight.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, at about the 72-hour mark, you start to go a bit mad.
Yeah.
And so, and also I was in deep, deep grief. And I just couldn't sleep. And I felt like I was going a bit mad. Mm. And I kept the whole time, every single hour that went by, I was like, is he dead now? Is he dead now? Is he with us now? Is he dead now?
On a plane.
And it was my phone didn't work on the plane.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And the first leg is like, I don't know what it was, 17 hours or 12 hours or something. It was a long leg, so there was no way of knowing minute to minute was he still with us. And as the unhelpful nurse Laurie had told me that he wouldn't be, I kept thinking, he's probably dead now, or is he still alive? No, he's probably waiting for me, they've told him. And my mother had said, we've told him you're coming, he'll wait. Like, he couldn't speak at this point, but they said the hearing is the last thing to go. And so he knew I was coming, so I thought maybe he'll wait. But the whole time it was like torture.
Yeah.
And at one point I just went, if I don't sleep soon, I'm going to really lose it, and I'm on this flight. So I just went to the flight attendant and I said, look, and I'd seen when I came in the business class was basically empty. So I said, is there any chance I could just lie down for an hour? Because I think if I get an hour's sleep, I'm going to be all right.
Yeah.
And they said, no, I'm afraid you can't. Da, da, da. And I said, look, I don't want any business class service. I don't want anything like that. I'll pay to do it. Mm. I just need to lie down for an hour. I've hit a wall. And I can't sleep and I'm crying the whole time. And they could see, like, I wasn't trying it on. Yeah. Like, I looked really, really distressed. And I'd obviously been crying for hours. And they just did that thing of, you know, that voice of, and we're incredibly happy to tell you that that's not possible.
Oh, my God.
And I was just like, what am I going to do?
They said no.
No. And then
Is the worst plane ever.
About 6 hours later, I thought I really felt like I was losing it. And I thought, what am I going to do? So,
because that's so, like, to not know, to consistently not know,
to consistently not know, and I hadn't slept for so long,
is complete torture. Because all you want to do is know. You want some. Oh, I can't. It's like your life is on pause for 17 hours, and then another
12, whatever. Yeah, like, and I thought, well, when I arrive in Singapore, I can at least phone and find out at that halfway point. But I was still there, and it was hours and hours, and I was so, like, I was delirious.
Yeah, of course.
And I went into the loo. And so this is 2003, so it's 2 years after 9/11.
Yeah.
Everything, the security is so high. Everyone's still on extremely high alert about planes. There's anxiety that everyone had about planes at that point. Mm. It's hard to really remember that now.
Yeah, I know,
But I went into the loo and they had drawers of supplies.
Oh,
those sort of drawers of toothbrushes and stuff. And there was a whole drawer of razors, like shaving razors. And I just looked at that and thought, like, anybody could pull these razors out, tape them together and make a kind of box cutter.
Yeah.
So I just thought, I knew I was going to lose it. Yeah. I was so close to delirium, but I wasn't quite there. So I thought, I'm going to, you know, if you act crazy before you are crazy, you're in control of it.
Yes.
So I just came out and I thought, I have to lie down now or I'm going to actually die or not die. I have to lie down or I'm going to go insane. And then we're really in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
So I came out and I said really loudly to this flight attendant down, why are there all these razors in here? This is so dangerous. There could be a terrorist attack. Someone could use these for a terrorist attack. And the thing is, in 2003, if you shouted terrorist attack on a plane, you would be upgraded into business class in 45 seconds.
Which you were, I'm guessing.
They immediately took me to business class
and they
let me sleep for the rest of the flight.
was Deborah Frances White from the incredible Guilty Feminist podcast. She has a book out as well called The Guilty Feminist. So if you haven't read that or listened to the podcast, I can't recommend it enough. It's incredibly, empowering and brilliant. We've got three more clips coming up from some of our favourite moments from 2018 shows. First up, you're going to hear comedian Michael Legg. Michael Legg came in to talk to me about his dog, Jerk. And I know I often get tweets from people saying that they can't quite believe how much they're grieving for an animal. So if that's you or you know someone, this is a really good episode to listen to. But here is Michael. You'll hear Michael talking about Jerk and the holiday romance they had. This was requested on Twitter by @HannahWallace. So Hannah, this is for you. After Michael, you'll be hearing the illustrator Gary Andrews. You might know him as the sort of, he does Doodle a Day, Widower's Diary on Twitter. This was requested by @FreyaHedgewitch. I hope I'm saying that right, Freya. Gary was actually the first widower we had come on. I know lots of you would like more of that. It sounds weird, but I am trying to find more grief stories that we can all relate to. Gary is an incredible man, and his wife died of sepsis, I mean, literally just over a year ago. And this was a really moving episode. And in this clip, you'll hear him telling how he told his kids that their mum had died, his amazing wife, Joy. After Gary, you're going to hear stand-up comedian Susie Ruffle. Susie came onto the show to talk to us about her brilliant Nan. It's such a nice episode, but this was a bit of a spooky moment that Susie had with after her Nana died, which still gives me goosebumps. So enjoy.
Jack and I had plans.
Yeah,
we had plans that never happened. It's true. I mean, a week before she died, no, 2 weeks before she died, I booked a holiday before me and Joe. We're going to log cabin in Farnham, in the middle of the woods in Farnham.
Did you go or did you cancel? Did you go?
Yeah.
How was it?
Wow. I've not thought about this until right now. I think I got through it because of another dog. As soon as I arrived, this massive dog, what are they called? Riesler?
Rizzlers.
No, because I know a Riesler dog called Rizzler. Why I always have to go, no, what's the right word? Because I know Rizzler.
Yeah.
Now, is Rizzler a Riesler or is it called Riesler and it's a Rizzler? Anyway, this dog was a Rizzler. And I went, oh, you've got a lovely dog. And they knew that I was supposed to be there with the dog. And they were like, oh, yeah, she's been here like for 2 months. I was like, oh, right. What age? Your normal dog questions.
Yeah, normal dog questions, yeah.
So, all right, yeah. What happened was someone was staying in one of the log cabins. It was a couple, and this was her dog. And they split up while there. And I went, and they abandoned the dog. Yeah.
God.
And then I was all of a sudden just wanted to spend time with this dog. Just went, well, look, this is... That dog was a happy, happy dog. And I don't know who that couple were, but that dog is way happier. Trust me.
Way better off without them.
Way better off than those two idiots.
How could you leave a dog in a...
Oh.
That's like leaving your entire clothes. Yeah. Like, why would you just be like, we split up so the dog has to stay here?
It's nuts. And you know what? The people who work there love that dog. So that dog's having a really happy life.
Yeah, so it worked out.
So
you then hung out with that dog?
Yeah, for a couple of days, you know. But I hadn't really thought about that before. Yeah.
I like to think there's a dog network.
Yeah.
And the dog network went, beep, 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 beep. Please go to Michael Legg and Farnham.
Well, it was in a log cabin. I went to this log cabin at Halloween.
Wow.
In the middle of not fuck nowhere. And, and me and this dog, it's terrible, I can't remember the dog's name, because it was a lovely dog. We watched... Friday the 13th again.
What you're saying is you had a holiday romance.
I guess I did. I had a little fling.
And you can't even remember her name.
You know what?
You can't remember her name.
I was heartbroken at the time and I needed someone.
And she was on the rebound.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what?
So you both found each other. It's perfect. She wasn't looking for a long term. Yeah.
One thing led to another. We watched Friday the 13th.
And she was settled. She wasn't looking for anything, but she just, you know, she's still unsure about stuff. And you were heartbroken.
Exactly.
That's a good match.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, maybe that's how you go for it. You just need a little fling.
I can see that that's the thing. I think when people say, oh, you're going to get another dog, well, they don't understand the process that you have to go through. But I think what you've acknowledged is it's important to spend time with other dogs.
When I left the log cabin in Farnham, there was no sort of like...
Yeah, it's well, holiday romance.
Right. It was like, see ya.
That's the great thing about some dogs. Some dogs get it. They're like, sure, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm who you see for now. I'm not looking for anything else.
Yeah. Hey, there's some sequels to that Friday the 13th. Yes, there are. We'll get through them maybe one day.
See you next Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good. So you still went on holiday. I think that's nice that you didn't cancel it.
Yeah. Well, Joke and I had been to this log cabin twice before. You know, and it was great.
So, was that hard though? Did you feel like memories of her?
Or? Yeah, really. Yeah. I mean, I just felt like, well, you know, I just go anyway.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think that it was going to be emotional or anything whenever I went there. It weirdly, it wasn't emotional being in the log cabin, and it wasn't emotional seeing another dog. But I went for walks in the country and went, Joke loved this bit.
Yeah.
Then it was emotional. Like, the very first time I went to this log cabin, you have to understand, Jerk is a city dog.
Right, yeah.
I taken her to the country for the first time in her life, and it was like, every smell was brand new, and she was like, oh my God, I've just been given crack. It's amazing. And I let her off the lead, which is totally normal.
Yeah.
She was like, whatever, 3 years old, and she just bolted, and I stood there watching her, thinking, I'm never going to see her again.
Oh my God.
She just bolted off. It was such an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
Like she leapt over a river and I'm like, bye.
She was just literally, like you said, she'd taken her first bit of crack.
She ran with deer, and I'm not kidding you. At one point during that 3-4 day trip, she ran with deer. And my heart just swelled like 15 times. Like, I think this might be the most perfect moment of my life. Beautiful.
I'm so glad she had the holiday.
Yeah.
They had managed to keep it from the kids.
Wow.
Because with the time difference and stuff, this is now, by the time I got home, it was mid-afternoon. So they'd had a rock climbing day booked with their little cousins and stuff. God. So they had managed to...
So they were waiting for you to get back, you see. My God, that's so wise, I think, because you it wouldn't want to not think, have your
I
dad
mean,
there.
Because I was so glad it was me that got to tell them dad, and that's, you know what I mean? But
no,
that
of
is
course,
the word.
Of course. You just want, you don't want them to... You
they knew Mummy was in
help.
Hospital because they'd seen her taken away and they knew she was in hospital. So I took them out to the garden because I wanted to be out in nature, and I told them I didn't want to be sitting in the house. Yeah. I wanted to be sat in the garden. So I took them out in the garden and sat down and said, right. And this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. Can you know, imagine. I mean, Ben was only 7 at the time. Lily was just 10. Yeah, she was just 10 and he was 7 and a bit. And I said, okay, so you know Mummy got taken into hospital last night. Because she was really, really poorly, you know, like, yeah. And I said, well, the doctors worked ever so hard to try and make her better and stuff, but I'm afraid it got a lot worse and they couldn't help her and Mummy's died. And I actually had to, from the first moment, I thought, I'm going to use the D word.
Good,
I'm not going to say, Mummy's sleeping, Mummy's gone to heaven, all that bullshit. I said, no, and Mummy's died, you know. I may fall apart in a minute.
Of course. Anyway. I mean, I'm on the edge. Go for it. This is the place to do it.
And there was that moment of silence, and then it was literally like the sound of wounded animals, you know, that primal sound, and we just sort of held each other tight and had a nice little cry for a few minutes and stuff, and then they did that incredible kid thing. It was like they're crying, I want to go back inside now, what's for tea, you know, and you're like,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. We have to eat, I guess.
Yeah.
And that was the pattern that then set now for the next few months in a way. And you know, obviously, for the first few nights, they didn't want to be anywhere except in my bed, you know, with me, which was fine, except for the fact that it was like sleeping with a sort of an insane starfish and the duvet thief.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like between the two of them, I was either getting kicked in the nuts or freezing cold because she'd got all the duvet.
I moved into my mum's bedroom after my dad died
for about
8 months.
Yeah.
And both of us can't remember when I did it. I was just there. And then one day we'd been clearing out the shed. And there'd been a lot of mice in the shed, and I'd got really freaked out. And she'd been like, oh, don't be stupid, you know, it's fine. Anyway, we'd gone to bed, and I'd obviously had a lot of nightmares about the mice.
Yeah.
And I spent the night like trying to brush mice off me. And I woke up in the morning, and she was sat there with a cup of tea looking at me. She went, if you do one more night like that, you're going back in your room. And she still calls it like Night of the Mice. She was like, you're bloody moving and twitching. Oh. I couldn't sleep. And I think she tried several times to be like, Carrot, like,
you know, wake up, you obviously, and I just didn't wake up.
No, no.
So I, yeah.
Well, I had, I think I had about a week solid of both of them in there, at the end of which I was like, guys, this is so hard. It's not a giant bed. It's only a normal double. It's not a king size.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to have to start going back in your own rooms, guys. Do you want us to do it in shifts? Take it in turns to start with. So they did. They took it in turns to sleep in with me. So it wasn't quite... It was either getting kicked or having the duvet stolen rather than both.
At least you know what you're... Okay, tonight is this.
Yeah, tonight I wear a cricket box. You know, it was that sort of thing. But and then eventually it was like, okay, time to go back to your own rooms, guys. And there's only... We're only talking, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, I think, before they were back in their own. But I said, listen, it's the bed is here.
Yeah.
If you wake up and you need me, just come in.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, that goes on for as long as you want, as long as you like. Just don't bring the boyfriend away. You know, when you get old enough, or, you know, it's literally like, you know, the bed is always there if you need it. And actually, in, I think in the last 6 months, I've managed to be flying solo, which is kind of nice. So
yeah,
they've settled into being
okay
with it. And
it's handy, I guess, for your mental health as well to have sleep.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have slept like a log ever since. I've had no bad dreams about it. I've had no, you know, sleep has been... Although not a lot of it, because I'm a bit of a lark and an owl. I'm one of these people that just doesn't sleep much anyway. Yeah. Even less since this. I think I've done that thing of going to bed really late. Mm. You're sitting there watching telly. Oh, just one more program. One more glass of whiskey.
After my dad died, I remember one time it was like 1 a.m. and all the lights were on and me and my mum were like chatting. We had some music on. I was like, what? This? And I had this memory of like, it didn't used to be like this.
No.
But you... It's like the rules are off.
Well, the rules have changed, haven't they? I mean, that's the thing, and it's the same with daily life. All the rules changed instantly. Your life became a different life.
Do you believe in sort of ghosts and stuff? Do you believe in any?
I'm not sure.
Because I would say that generally I'm a skeptic.
Yeah, I'm a bit. Yeah,
but I had a weird moment only, maybe like 3-4 months ago. Well, I was in bed, asleep. My girlfriend was staying over. She was asleep as well. And I was having this dream. So I know it was before anyone's like, it's a dream. So I was having this, the listeners to this podcast aren't those people. So I was having this dream where I was trying to get to Nan. And she was in Commercial Road, which is a big shopping road in Portsmouth. She was with her two sisters. And I was like, Nan, Auntie Glad, Auntie Bet. They couldn't hear me, and I was kept trying to get to them, and I was being held back.
Wow.
And but they were like, you know, 10 feet ahead of me, 20 feet ahead of me. So I sort of like was wriggling in my sleep. And then, you know, you have that moment between sleep and awake.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard my Nan's voice, and I it sounded like it was in my room saying, "We've got to go, we've scared her."
My God!
Yeah, and then I just like woke up right, and I was like, "Are you here?" And then nothing.
Wow, that's a good one.
I was like,
"Oh my God!"
Do you know what? I've always been scared of ghosts, and I've been less because I stay in like I've just been back from touring Australia, and I was staying in like some weird ass motels.
Yeah,
and I've always been really scared of.
Yeah.
Murderers, ghosts, murdering ghosts.
Sure.
All three.
Totally with you.
Yeah. And all of a sudden I was like, there is one. Nan probably sort of has one. Nan.
Of course she will.
Keep an eye on.
I've had this similar thing that I was on my own in the house once. It can't have been that long after he died. And something, I can't remember what happened, but I remember saying, look, if it's you, it's scary. So it needs to stop. And it stopped. And then I remember thinking, I'm too much of a scaredy cat.
Yeah.
So, like, I can't deal with it.
Yeah, totally. I remember saying to Nan when Grampy died, I was like, I feel like someone's in my room.
Yeah.
I feel like there's always someone in my room. And I had this really big wardrobe that all my toys were in. It was it wasn't a wardrobe, it was a cupboard.
Oh, yeah.
And all my toys were in there. And my dad used to always put this scary mask in there as a joke.
Not funny.
He was
scared for you.
Absolutely awful. Oh, my dad owned a fancy dress shop when I was a kid.
I'm scared already.
So it was like a fancy dress head of a drunk.
And God.
It was awful. But very fun fancy dress shop. But So I was like always scared of everything you could think of, I was scared of. And I said to Nan once, I was like, oh, I really feel like I'm being watched in my room. I hate sleeping in there. Like, when I keep getting up in the night and getting in with mum and dad, being like, there's someone in my room, someone in my room. Nan was like, it's just cramps. Like, that's not in my room. I'm making it better.
It's still scary. But I think that's really good what you said, because you're all right now. Nana's watching.
Nan's watching.
Nan's going to sort it out.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
That was stand-up comedian Susie Ruffle talking about her nan and how she sort of paid her a visit. I think that's the best ghost one we've had actually on the show. That was it's still goosebumpy. In this next last bunch of clips, you're going to hear first of all the brilliant comedian Ishan Akbar. Ishan came on to talk to me about his mum who died, and this is a very funny story he told about literally having to lay her to rest at her funeral. After that, you're going to hear comedian Bobby Mair. Bobby is they're all brilliant. I'm saying that about everybody, but yeah, Bobby is incredible. Bobby suffers from borderline personality disorder, and he's talking here very honestly about how that affected him and how he deals with things, especially after he'd found out his biological mother had died, and he found out in a really bizarre way. Again, I would recommend listening to the whole episode. After that, you're going to hear musician and broadcaster Animatronic from the Scissor Sisters giving us a very light-hearted way of dealing with how you feel shit sometimes. Anna came in to talk to me about her dad who died of AIDS, which again, if you haven't listened to, I'd recommend. And finally, again, it was hugely requested on Twitter, the episode we did with Aisling B, stand-up comedian Aisling B. Aisling is an incredible human. Her father took his own life when Aisling was a very, very small child. And this is just a clip that Aisling really passionately talked about trying to help people who are feeling at the absolute rock bottom. And so I wanted to end on that, just in case anyone listening out there today is feeling shit. This is from Aisling to you from us.
So this was my first experience of a funeral.
Really?
Yeah.
Bless you.
My first experience of a funeral, and it was, when I reflect back on it, the organisation of the funeral and everything happening, my dad, bless him, he, and I guess we'll talk about this in a minute, you, when you have such a dominating figure as my mother was,
right,
you kind of forget how great the other person is in that relationship.
Yeah.
And my dad has since, and at the time showed tremendous strength in the way he's dealt with everything. But in terms of organising the funeral, people rallied round, and she's buried about a 7-minute drive from my house.
Wow.
And it was frenetic, but it seemed calm. Mm. Frenetic in the pace at which things were happening, but calm in the way in which they were happening.
Yeah.
So it was my first experience of a funeral, and we announced it on the Saturday morning. I remember I set up kind of a WordPress tribute page to my mum. I announced it on there. I announced it on Facebook and something useful Facebook did that day. We had about 575 people turn up.
Oh, my goodness.
They ran out of space in the mosque that's inside the cemetery.
Wow.
People were praying basically in the car park.
Oh, my God.
And it was the most amazing day.
Yeah.
It was my second. It was my second funeral actually, because the first funeral I kind of wiped from my mind was of my mum's best friend's son who passed away the year before at age 22, and that was a horrible experience.
Yeah.
It was not because he was 22. It was in the East London Mosque, and they had like 8 funerals in the same time. Wow. All the bodies were in a viewing gallery. It was frenetic. People who didn't know the deceased were looking at the bodies. It was just, and now I just remembered it now that I'm talking about it. And in a sense, I was going into the funeral thinking, I hope it's not going to be like that. And it just wasn't. It was on a Sunday. We were the only people there. Well, I say only people, 500.
Yeah.
I'm not really a practicing Muslim anymore.
Right.
And I was just following the lead of people who knew better than I did as to what's required.
I think a lot of our generation, you go and you're like, what am I supposed to do?
Do whatever.
Like, what's happening?
Yeah. And I gave it, you know, from the what my parents did teach me, what little I did know, I said prayers, Arabic prayers, Muslim prayers, as best as I knew them. And all of a sudden, my brother and I were beckoned to climb down into mum's grave.
Yeah, you said so. So you have to climb into the grave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the way it works in Islam is you are literally put to rest, laid to rest by, in the case of a woman, someone they're unable to marry.
Okay.
And in this case, obviously, it's her children.
Yeah.
It's her sons. And it's only men that can go through this process. So my brother and I, who aren't the thinnest boys on the planet, found ourselves climbing down a ladder.
Oh, my God. Were you like, what?
Yeah, and it's weird when I think about it. I had, you know, 98% of my anxiety was about me having to bury my mum.
Yeah.
But 2% of it was, will I fit? Like, will we fit in this?
Oh,
right?
Bless you.
Which is an odd anxiety to have. I mean, that is.
But it's these practical things occur to you. Like,
yeah.
It's like we've talked about with the Matt twins when I and the Matt twins both had the same thing. Like, oh my God, what am I going to wear?
Yeah, yeah.
Like these things. I'm going, I don't have anything nice that's black.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So I completely understand. It's like, am I going to fit in that?
Yeah.
Wow. So you're climbing down a ladder into the...
So you climb down the ladder and I went to the side where eventually her head and shoulders would be laid to rest. And my brother was on the other side. And I kind of looked up and my mum was in this burial shroud and we kind of just put our arms out and I remember carrying her. You know, I could hold my mum.
That's really beautiful.
It is beautiful. Yeah. It brought me closer to God, not necessarily to Islam, but it absolutely brought me closer to God because I couldn't believe that I had the opportunity to not only feel my mum's final rest in place, to know what it felt like. You know, under my bare feet, the sand, it felt like Bali. It was just amazing, cool, soft, and it felt right that that's where she'd be.
Yeah.
And I remember, I didn't even have to particularly convince myself that this was... the right thing to happen, even though it was a woman who I absolutely loved unconditionally. So when they lowered my mum's body into my brother's arms, my brother had her legs, I had her head and shoulders. The next thing was to kind of lower her.
Yeah.
And I'd struggled because it is very narrow.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is like, it's a really beautiful idea, but it's tricky.
It's very tricky.
It's tricky to carry out.
And so we somehow managed it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my forehead had the other side of her grave completely implanted over the top of my forehead. And what you have to do in Islam is once you've laid them, their faces are turned to face Mecca.
Right.
On the right-hand side. So you kind of lay to rest on your right. But my fear is that not only is my mum facing Mecca, but she's also facing an imprint of my buttocks. and that is something that haunts me. And I think to myself, I really hope my mum is not looking at my ass. That is not something I wanted to happen.
As a mum, to be honest, she probably wouldn't mind, honestly.
Yeah, probably wouldn't mind. Do you know what I mean?
Like, that's something you've seen her whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
That's been part of her world.
I know.
That's kind of lovely.
Maybe. I don't know.
She's probably looking just past the bum
yeah,
to Mecca.
Okay, right.
So
okay.
We'll
ignore that.
Yeah.
Because I remember because I climbed back out, and when I took my the tunic off that I wore, it was the unmistakable imprint on the back. And you kind of think to yourself, oh, I can't believe I've done this, but okay.
Well, you can't go back in. I just need to smooth over.
Can you smooth over that bit, please?
Yeah.
So,
but in a way, I think that's really nice because there is a part of you that's down there with her. There's a part of your memory, your print is there.
Yeah.
There's something, even though, of course, it's your bum. You're a comedian.
Yeah. Of course.
But
what else would it be?
Something really nice about that. Of like,
it is absolutely. But at the same time, it. You know, I am a London-born.
Yeah.
British Asian guy
who
had a very Asian upbringing and also a very English upbringing, and actually this going through this experience was something I just never imagined I'd be doing. And I honestly didn't know how it worked.
I just got angry, and I was just angry at everyone, and then I started to get angry at strangers, which leads to yelling at people in shops, which leads to the police coming and being like, you know, is it, like I was just yelling at people in shops and
just shops.
Close friends.
Just shops.
You know, not always just shops, sometimes on trains.
Yeah, I say trains are normally more.
I remember this is before, but the pieces were there for it to happen anyways. But the day after we got married, we had our big wedding, which was for the show. And our friends and family, but me and Harriet just got married alone at Chelsea Town Hall.
Oh, nice.
It was very sweet. And then the next day, I went to a store to get change, and I gave a lady £5, and I said, here's five, I need five, can I get £5 coins? And she said, no. And I said, why not? I think you have it, can I just, she said, no. I said, please, I just need the £5. She said, no, and then I said, give me the money! And then I just started screaming, and then the police came.
Sorry.
I know, it's funny. You know, it's a funny story. But the thing is, I was right, but then I was very wrong by yelling at the woman. Whoever, if you're listening, lady, I yelled at, I'm very sorry. I'd like to buy you flowers or whatever I could do to make it okay. And then...
I'm laughing as well because I...
No, it's a funny... I mean,
also,
it's fine.
I was really angry after my dad died. Like, and my family weren't. So my brother and my mum did not... It didn't manifest as anger. It was complete. But I was like a ball of rage. So I'm laughing because like there's so many times I wanted to do that. And I think my Englishness or something. And I was 15. I was too scared. But I would get so like it's like fire, isn't it? It's like just see
the
fire.
The heat in your chest. You feel the heat in your chest.
And
your
handshake. Yeah. And you just think,
you're
I mean, shaking. I could crush a brick. Like I can. And it is a powerful feeling. And I think that's what I liked about it, because grief is so, you feel so out of control and so shit. And then the anger feels like, oh, this is something I can do. I can be angry. Whereas the crying just felt to me like, well, what does that do? It didn't feel like an option.
Well, then I feel vulnerable. I hate that feeling. Ugh, when you're sad, sadness is awful because you just feel open and vulnerable, like people could hurt you and you feel weak. I mean, it's all not real. You should be able to be sad, obviously. And if you feel sadness, you should be able to express it and cry in a river or whatever you do. But I just, I can feel sad for a while and then I'm working on it, but very quickly it'll just turn to anger.
Yeah.
That's my go-to emotion because I'm very uncomfortable with all the rest.
I've only been in therapy for, as I say, about a year.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I didn't know. I very recently learned this about myself, that I don't like being vulnerable. Because I was like, no, I'm just an angry person. I'm just go to anger. And then my therapist was like, it's because you're vulnerable. And that really shook me because I was like, oh, that's what I'm avoiding. I didn't know that's what I was avoiding.
I mean, even this podcast, the reason I'm laughing and like, I don't want to be vulnerable. It's so uncomfortable.
It's horrible. And well, that's, but don't you think, I think that's quite a comedian thing.
Of course.
Of like, there's pain and I don't want to be vulnerable. And when someone dies and it's out of control, it hurts so much. And I think that's the thing again, if you're angry, actually, you come across as very strong, but actually you're
actually more...
I know, it's very... You're it's actually, not at all.
You're actually so afraid of getting hurt again.
Terrified. Well, people are terrified.
So much to be hurt.
Like when you're angry, your shoulders go up, yeah. You know? I heard this, I think it's a Pete Holmes joke. It's an American stand-up. It's very funny. But he talks about your shoulders going up when you're angry, and that's because you're afraid predators are going to attack your neck.
Sorry.
Isn't that,
I spilled water over myself right. at the same time.
But he's afraid predators. So you're afraid. That's why your shoulders go up, because you're protecting your neck from predators. It's just your fight or flight response, you know? And I was in fight for 6 months.
Ready to fight.
Just ready to fight.
Oh, my God.
But there was no danger in front of me.
But then that's the other thing I read about grief and anger is that the danger's past. So it's like your body, the danger is like someone took someone you love.
Mm.
But your body is like, but I'm here ready to fight, but it's gone. The moment's
gone.
There's
no fight left.
So you're just like left with this use. It's like you said, it's so useless because you're ready to fight and be angry, but there's nothing to physically do with that. So yeah, it's really hard. How did you deal with it? How did you get through this period of grief? What happened? What was the...
I got a really good therapist.
So you had a new one from...
Yes, my old one was... Nathan was a nice man, but he was... It didn't work for me.
Yeah, I always think you have to shop around.
I just learned how... I got this therapy called dialectical behavioral therapy, which I have borderline personality disorder, which is just inability to regulate your emotions.
Right.
It's hard to explain other than I just Google it. If you're someone who constantly your friends don't pick up because you cry a lot or yell a lot, you're probably just go look into borderline.
Yeah.
It's a very underdiagnosed disease. But so I figured out that's what was wrong, which I'd been diagnosed with when I was like 20.
Wow.
But then all these therapists said you don't have that because it's like they didn't have a treat. They didn't think it's treatable, but it totally is. So I went to DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy, and within a few months I was back to relative normal. And now I'm better than ever.
I can show you one of the things that actually really helps, and it's not crying.
What's that?
You want to know?
Yes.
Okay, I have to move away from the mic because it might be really loud. But going like this, but really hard, really helps. So like... Like that really, really helps. And it's not crying.
And I'm going to do it.
Okay. Oh, like as hard as you can.
Okay, I'll try harder.
Then you got like some, you know, vibration going on in your mouth.
I just liked how much of a fart it sounded like.
Yeah.
I thought that sounded like a really good, that sounded like a great fart impression. That made me laugh a lot. So I was like, wow, that's a really good fart impression. It does feel better.
Yeah. It's kind of like it's kind of like getting it out. It's not laughing and it's definitely not crying, and there's a little bit of an aggression release. Yeah, so therapy is, I don't know what those are called.
That is
raspberry
good.
Therapy?
Yeah, well, that's your next book.
Raspberry therapy.
Animatronic raspberry therapy with robots. I think that's really good. What is that? It's just something. I just think it's the same. Like I sometimes just need to scream fuck into a pillow.
That's...
And it's like when I get cross when people say like, oh, don't swear. I'm like, no. It's what gets me through the day.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
And that feels as good as telling something to fuck off.
Yeah, yeah. No, and sometimes you just want to scream fuck, and you can't. But you can't until you're blue in the face, and no one will get offended. They'll be like, oh, well, that's a very funny thing.
I love that.
Yeah, and it is kind of like, you know, it is kind of like saying fuck this. It is, there's an emotional sort of release.
But it comes back to this, like we were talking about this, you know, this community and government, and this is the thing that grief, like, there's no control over grief.
Yeah.
And so you do feel sometimes backed into a corner of like, well, what can I do with all this sadness?
Yeah.
And you can just tell it to fuck off and do a raspberry. That's quite nice because it's like, I don't know, you sort of feel like, yeah, it's that shrug of the shoulders, and it's like, that's it, it's life. But it's not but it's not everything. It's not, I think sometimes when you have a lot of grief, you can feel like that's all you can see.
Yeah.
And it's a good reminder of like, no, there isn't. There's other stuff.
Yeah.
But it overwhelms you because it's so sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing too, is the darkness is overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you do have to consciously light candles in order to stave it off, because it does have the power to overtake you.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's sad that in a world of so much beauty, it's the darkness that really, really sticks with you.
Well, I heard something the other day on a podcast I was listening to, and it was saying like that with memories and sadness, like it's you can't remember being happy as well as you can remember being sad.
That's so, it's so true, because and I think because there's a real physical feeling of sadness that, and that sort of heavy in the chest, empty feeling that you don't really get from happiness. There isn't sort of a physical equivalent. Well, sort of there is.
Yeah, well, it's just saying it's so fleeting. It was like happiness, you feel it physically, but it doesn't last in your system. And obviously it's so, like, you know, primeval, isn't it? It's like there's a reason. If you're sad, your body needs to tell you and protect you to survive. If you're happy, great. Your body doesn't need to do anything. Brilliant. Carry on being happy. We don't need to remember it.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Move on. Now we need to find more things to eat and kill. Like, but it's important to remember that it is just that, it's just a feeling. Like the happiness is just a feeling, the sadness is just a feeling. It's like the Edinburgh Festival's on at the moment, and all comedians have this saying of like, ignore the good reviews, ignore the bad ones. Like, it, nothing of these things matter. And I sort of relate that to life of like, you know, it, by all means, acknowledge it. Yes, that's nice. That's horrible. But then don't, you try not to linger too much on these things, because like you said, it's overwhelming. And like, it's funny, isn't it, like literally lighting candles, why is that such a comforting thing to do? Because it reminds you that there is, you know, there will be light again in this overwhelming feeling of sadness.
So many people are afraid to talk to anyone because they think someone will get upset. But if you don't get upset, living in a state of almost upset, if you don't talk to your wife because you think telling her that you are down and don't feel like living anymore is upsetting and will upset her, you will live in a state of upsettedness, which is like living with your shoulders up around your ears with stress, and you will get sicker and more unwell. If you get upset, then you can start to work to get better. If you never get upset or upset someone, you're going to stay in that paralysis and that numb state for a very long time, and it will catch up with you in the end. And that is for women as well, and I'm only being gender specific here because of all the messages I've gotten through, because I think this happens a lot with wives and husbands in particular. Allow a space where your husband can get upset, and where if they tell you that they don't want to live or they're really struggling, that is not a comment on your worth as a wife or a girlfriend or a partner. That is not a comment on how much they think of your children or the value of their family. It's just that something inside's broken and needs fixing. And that's the one thing that our mental health services are not going to get any better anytime soon. There is no magic money tree, as Theresa May would say, to fix the system, to get therapy in that. It's not coming. And that's where we all have to do the harder work, is not with a stranger in a room that we've paid £100, a bit like a prostitute, to sort of sit and have sex with us for an hour. The harder is fixing the problems in your own bedroom. And
don't get a prostitute in for that.
Don't get in. Though I have to say, apparently that's what a lot of them end up doing, is having a chat. That is where the work as a society to deal with mental health problems and the stigma around it and change has to start, because, and it has to start from a place of you deciding that you are worth fixing, because,
or being helped as well, just being helped.
Yeah,
just, but there's
a lot of chat. Say, for example, there's two sides to it. I suppose one is starting this now in young boys and young girls, and that's where, like I was saying before, getting vegetables into kids before they get sick.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with emotional language and talking therapy and teaching them how to emote.
Yeah.
My emotional language has like come on so much in a year, but 3 years ago I had no English words to tell you, a friend, in front of another friend, what had happened. I didn't have the words or the English to get it out of my neck to you. I sometimes can feel it close up and the words won't come out. The other thing is then, if you're in a place where you're really low, being like, we need to talk more about mental health, or it's like you have a broken leg, people wouldn't judge if you have a broken leg, that you're in such a place that you don't want to pick up the phone or ring. You know, you don't want to ring your friends. You ring your friend normally once the crux of the sadness has passed.
Yeah,
you rarely actually ring someone crying and screaming, going, I want to die. People don't do that enough. So in that moment where you feel on your own and alone, in that moment, if just it's almost like where what is, and I don't know if I have the answers at all, but a little bit of help might be, what is the, in case of emergency, break this glass, which is something my friend was talking about. He lost a friend to suicide recently. In that moment, if you can hopefully go and make yourself a cup of tea and hopefully wait that 15 minutes for a cup of tea. And if you can find not happiness, but hope, not that you're going to win the lottery tomorrow, but just hope that tomorrow might be a little bit better, or that you might get out of bed a bit earlier, or that you won't have a sense of failure tomorrow, or that if you go to bed early and tomorrow might be a little bit better. If that's what you can hold on to, then that's, they're the sort of skills and things we need to start talking about slowly but surely. What we know the number to ring if there's a fire. We know as ladies, yeah, if you're getting attacked, shout fire, because no one will come and save you if you shout rape. We know all the little things to do in certain situations. But what about when our souls run out of juice, when we don't want to go on anymore? We don't, as a society, know our own in case of emergency break glass. And I think those are things we should start to do before it gets to that point.
You've been listening to Now That's What I Call Griefcast Part 2. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. Not everybody does. Much appreciated. You have been listening to clips from, she says, searching her notes, the Sophie Black episode, Robert Popper, Deborah Francis White, Michael Legg, Gary Andrews, Susie Ruffle, Ishan Akbar, Bobby Mayer, Animatronic and Ashling B. All of those episodes are available on the Acast website or wherever you get your podcasts from, so just search their names and you can hear the full episodes. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, and you can email thegriefcast@gmail.com. If you've got this far, you're a true fan. Thank you from the bottom and the top of my heart and my soul and my brain and my head for listening and making this show a thing. Thank you for emailing me. Thank you for helping people on the Twitter when they've needed advice. And as I said, we are taking a break for January just to try and rest, really, and get my head together. I'm fine, don't worry. I know some of you have been very sweetly concerned about me, but I'm all good. I just definitely could do with a break. Thank you for listening. I hope that New Year is okay for all of you as well, because I know that can be a tough time. And I just want to say, remember, you are not alone.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.